chairperson. I'm now going to turn to some information on the performance of national and provincial government from an institutional perspective. In other words, from a managerial perspective within national and provincial departments.
Last year,
in collaboration with DPSA, National Treasury, and drawing on information from the Auditor General and the Public Service Commission, we developed a holistic assessment tool in order to give a picture of the state of management practices in departments. And we did assessments of national and provincial departments, and we will be doing those assessments on an annual basis with the aim of getting departments to get into a continuous improvement curve with regard to their management practices. The tool assesses management practices in departments based on looking at 31 management standards in 17 management areas. And it involves a key element of the assessment process is a self-assessment element. And we found that that's where the real value add comes, because we sit with the top management of departments and get the top management departments to assess themselves where they are with regard to the quality of their management practices. After that self-assessment element, there's then a moderation part to the process where we draw on secondary information to check whether there's evidence that the manager's view of the quality of the management practices is accurate. And the results are then provided to the departments, who are then expected to produce improvement plans. And then that's repeated on an annual basis. These are the management areas that we're looking at with the assessment process. So it's a range of generic management practices: strategic management, governance and accountability, financial management, human resource management, systems and management. These are all the key generic management functions that departments use to convert inputs into outputs. And it's therefore important for the achievement of the outcomes, because it's through these management practices that we actually deliver services to the public and we deliver on our commitments. What the tool does is it's based primarily on the existing legal and regulatory requirements for each of these areas of management practice, and it assesses whether a department in terms of four levels, where level one is non-compliance with the legal regulatory requirements, level two is partial compliance, level three is full compliance, and level four is full compliance and doing things smartly. The reason why level four is important is that it's possible to be compliant but not to be working efficiently and effectively. For example, it's possible to have compliant supply chain management practices but not to be procuring very smartly. So what level four tries to assess whether or not you're adhering to the legal requirements and you're also operating smartly, because there's a lot of discretion within the legal frameworks. There's a lot of room for management discretion to do things in a smart way. The legal frameworks that we have assume that managers will apply their minds and they will do things cleverly in order to get the highest level of efficiency and effectiveness. So this slide just gives you an example for one of the performance areas that is assessed, the service delivery improvement performance area. The legal requirement is that you have to have a service delivery charter and service delivery improvement plan and service delivery standards, and that your service delivery charter and service delivery standards must be publicly displayed. So if a department does not have a service charter and service standards, it's at level one. If a department has a service charter and service standards, it's at level two. If it also has a service delivery improvement plan, it's at level three. And then it's working smartly if it regularly monitors compliance to the service delivery standards, and if top management assesses regularly, considers the reports on compliance with the service standards, and uses that to identify improvements that must be put in place in order to make sure that in future it does comply with the service delivery standards. So I think this illustrates the difference between level 3 and level 4, where at level 3 you can have your service charter, service standards, and service delivery improvement plan in place. You can be compliant, but your service delivery might not actually improve. You actually have to have the management using that information to inform service delivery in order for service delivery to improve, and that's at level 4. So in 2011-2012, we assessed 158 national and provincial departments, which is about 65% of national and provincial departments, and the departments which were assessed are here. We're doing this program as a joint program between ourselves and the offices of the Premier. All the provinces are participating. And we facilitate the assessments of the national departments, and the Office of the Premier facilitate the assessments of their provincial departments. So just to highlight some of the results from the 11-12 assessments, by the way, the overall report is available on our website, and the scorecards per national department are also available on our website. This shows for the key performance area of strategic management and the management areas of strategic planning, APP, program management, and M&E. The red is level 1, the yellow is the orange is level 2, the yellow is level 3, and the green is level 4. One key finding from this particular slide is that if you look at the M&E management area, in order to be at level 4, you need to periodically evaluate your major programs. And we found that only 13% of departments in their own self-assessment indicated that they periodically evaluate their major programs. And in that context, it's understandable why it's important to have a Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation, and we've put in place a national evaluation framework and a national evaluation plan, and putting in place provincial evaluation plans to try and address this problem and make sure that a much higher percentage of departments periodically evaluate their programs. This one shows the key results for the key performance area of governance and accountability. And the particular issue coming from this slide is in the area of service delivery improvement, which is of particular interest to this committee. And it indicates that if you look at the red and the orange, it indicates that 69% of departments, of the 156 departments assessed, in their own self-assessment, because these are the self-assessment results, not the model, in their own self-assessments, indicated that they do not have a service charter, service standards, and a service delivery or service delivery improvement plan in place, as required by the public service regulations. And only 3% of departments indicated that to be in that green of 3%, to be green, to be at level 4, you need top management. Remember, top management needs to regularly assess reports on whether or not the service standards are being met and to take corrective actions. So only 3% of departments indicated that their management are regularly monitoring compliance to their service delivery standards. And the slide also indicates that in terms of professional ethics and fraud prevention, high levels of departments, 67% in terms of professional ethics, assessed themselves as non-compliant with ensuring that they had the legislated policy and systems in place, and 51% of departments rated themselves as being less than fully compliant with regard to fraud prevention in terms of the legal requirements of what they're supposed to do. With regard to human resources and human resource management, in certain areas of human resource management, particularly organization design and implementation, recruitment practices, staff retention, management of diversity, and performance management of the SMS, more than 55% of departments rated themselves as less than being fully compliant with the legal prescripts. What is interesting about these results is these are the self-assessment results, and what's interesting about them is that they do indicate very positively that management has been frank when they've done their self-assessments. And the reason why I say that is because there's quite a high level of correlation between these self-assessment results and the findings of Auditor General reports. Similarly, the Auditor General has also been highlighting the same areas of weakness that are coming through from these self-assessments. So for example, in the area here of IT governance, you can see the red level for IT governance is very high, and the orange level. 81% of departments assess themselves as non-compliant with IT governance requirements. And this is also an issue which has been highlighted by the Auditor General in the Auditor General's reports. With regard to supply chain management and procurement, 50% or more of departments rated themselves as less than fully compliant for the standards related to demand management, acquisition management, and disposal management. And again, this is an area that has been highlighted as an area of weakness by the Auditor General. So these results have been presented to Cabinet, and we are now engaged in the second cycle for the 12-13 financial year at both national and provincial level. For the first cycle, the moderation process didn't work as well as we hoped it would, so we just focused on the self-assessment results, but from this year onwards we're going to be focusing more on moderated results. The key departments are expected to put in place improvement plans to address particularly the red and orange areas. And what we'll be looking for as we do these assessments repeatedly annually is the key thing that we'll be looking for is improvements against previous years. We're also in the process of, as I previously presented to the committee and as our minister presented to the committee, there's been a cabinet decision to change the assessment system for individual heads of department, and the results of these assessments will be a key input into the assessments of individual heads of department, accounting officers in future, so that, for example, an accounting officer, an individual accounting officer, can't be rated as a high performer if they're persistently performing poorly in terms of these kind of indicators, if their department is performing poorly in terms of these kind of indicators. Another thing that we're doing is we're busy finalizing a series of case studies. There are quite a number of departments which scored level 4 in a number of areas, and we're doing case studies on those good performers in good management areas, and we're going to distribute those case studies widely in the public service so that departments can learn from each other in terms of how to improve and what is achievable. In addition to these management performance assessments, DPME is also monitoring a range of other indicators related to areas of management on behalf of the Forum of South African Directors General and regularly reporting to the Forum on progress with these indicators. So one of the indicators that we're measuring is turnaround times for a variety of services, and some of these indicators have shown some improvements since we started measuring them. For example, the Department of Home Affairs has implemented an improvement in the turnaround time for temporary residence permits, which has changed from 40% being granted within 8 weeks in 2010 to 67% being granted within 6 weeks in 2012. SASSA has reduced its turnaround time for grant applications from 30 days in 2010 to 9 days in May 2012, which is a remarkable improvement. And SAPS also reports that it is on a steadily improving curve with regard to its reaction times for crimes in progress. For example, average measured reaction time according to SAPS for crimes in progress was 22.14 minutes in 2012, and that reduced to 16.51 minutes in May. Sorry, I've got the date wrong there. I think it's in 2010 or 11 there, to 16.51. Anyway, there's been an improvement in SAPS reaction times for crimes in progress. We're also reporting to FOSAD on the resolution rate on the calls coming into the presidential hotline, and that has improved from 39% in 2009 to 84% in May 2012. The average time taken to fill a funded vacancy in the public service has reduced from 9 months in 2009-2010 to 4.7 months in 11-12. And the submission of SMS financial disclosure forms to the Public Service Commission improved from 67% in 2011 to 72% in 2012. But here, the MPAT assessments indicated that Only 8 out of 103 departments are undertaking a risk assessment of the disclosures. So we have a problem with these SMS financial disclosures in that they're being done for compliance purposes and that the departments are generally not doing risk assessments on them. I mentioned the issue of service delivery improvements when we covered the MPAT results. This is an area of concern. For example, for the current cycle, by the 25th of June of this year, only 12% of departments, including provinces, have submitted their service delivery improvement plans to the DPSA as required by the regulations for the 2012-2015 cycle, when the stipulated deadline was the 31st of March 2012. And as I mentioned, our impact assessments show that only 2 or 3% of departments have their top management actively monitoring the adherence to their service delivery standards and implementation of their service delivery improvement plans. This is a key area of concern given that service delivery improvement is a key priority of government. Another challenge is the issue of payment to suppliers within 30 days. There has been some progress in that in 2011, Treasury introduced a new requirement for departments to produce to submit exception reports at both national and provincial level on a monthly basis on indicating how many invoices to what value had not been paid within 30 days and were still outstanding. And they also required departments to put in place tracking systems for the payment of suppliers within 30 days. This is a step forward because before we didn't have hard data on this problem of payment to suppliers within 30 days. We had anecdotal evidence that it was a problem and a major problem, but now we're starting to get hard data as a result of these exception reports. Unfortunately, even though all departments were required by Treasury instruction to submit reports from, I think it was from January or February 2012, in May 2012, only 28 out of 39 national departments and 8 provinces submitted exception reports. In Mpumalanga, that also was the 9th. They did also submit, but their figures were submitted late. On the basis of that May report, at that time, 53,100 invoices were there which had not been paid within 30 days to a value of 2 billion, which means that the average value of the unpaid invoice was about 38,000 rand, which means that it's small businesses in particular which are being negatively affected by this problem of non-payment to suppliers within 30 days. And the departments are also required to put in the exception reports the reasons for non-payment within 30 days, and in our analysis together with Treasury of those reasons, it appears that most of the reasons relate to weak internal management processes within departments. Other areas of challenges with regard to these indicators of administrative performance include a lack of responsiveness to the anti-corruption hotline. The feedback rate from departments to the National Anti-Corruption Hotline was only 42% in April 2012. And another area of concern is the debt owed by national provincial departments to municipalities, which is steadily increasing. It increased from 2.9 billion in June 2010 to 3.5 billion in March 2012. The Department of Health must be commended for its audits of health facilities and for actively monitoring from a national level the quality of service delivery at local level. That's the first step in terms of improvement. But the results of their audit are cause for concern in that they found that only 26% of the health facility met the standards that they set for cleanliness, only 45% met standards for availability of medicines and supplies, and 34% met the standards for patient safety. Okay, turning to our final dimension of assessing the performance of government from the perspective of citizens obtaining services at frontline service delivery sites, we're implementing again together with the Office of the Premier Frontline Service Delivery Monitoring Program. Part of our aim is to catalyze national and provincial departments to do this kind of verification of the quality of service delivery themselves. So we do unannounced monitoring visits together with the Office of the Premier to frontline service delivery sites, and we share the results with the departments and encourage them to do such visits themselves. When we do the visits, we have standard assessment forms where we check for various things at the service delivery sites, and we also conduct interviews with citizens at the sites and with staff in the sites. And we produce a scorecard for each facility which is being monitored. We share the results with the relevant departments and with cabinet. And we then work with the relevant departments to ensure that corrective actions are taken to address issues that are found in the visits. We also, again, developing case studies of good practice. For example, we have one produced on home affairs, and we're in the process of producing others. We've been doing these frontline service delivery visits to SATA offices, home affairs, driver's license testing centres, hospitals and clinics, schools, courts, police stations and municipal customer care centres. And we're looking at issues such as location and accessibility, opening and closing times, visibility and signage, queue management and waiting times and queues, whether or not citizens are being treated with dignity, cleanliness and comfort at the site, safety, and complaints and compliments management. This slide just shows an example of the scorecard that is produced. This is the scorecard for home affairs for various home affairs sites which were visited. Next, please. During 2011-2012, we made visits to 122 sites around the country, and key problem areas that we found were most particularly significantly below acceptable standards for cleanliness and comfort at service delivery sites, with widespread severe neglect of facilities management and basic maintenance. For both concurrent functions, which are run by provinces and municipalities, and for non-concurrent functions, which are run directly by national departments, This problem of facilities management and basic maintenance is common. Another key problem area that we found is long waiting times in queues and very little evidence of active queue management. And in analyzing those problems, key challenges that we identified, probably the most important is weak operations management related to frontline service delivery. In terms of, there's clearly a lack of standardization of operational work processes in front and back offices of service sites, often, and managers are not engaging in business process re-engineering to optimize efficiency and effectiveness of the work processes at the frontline service delivery sites. In addition, although there's quite a lot of monitoring that happens within departments, often that monitoring is done for compliance purposes, and managers don't use the information in the monitoring reports to inform improvements. It's rare that a service delivery site obtains feedback from its user community and uses the information that comes in their complaints boxes to actually inform improvements. And a key issue is this problem of maintenance and the cleanliness of the sites, and that it seems that at all levels, for concurrent and non-concurrent functions, it appears that there's general confusion about who is exactly responsible and accountable for facilities management, for maintenance and for cleanliness and upkeep of service delivery sites. And finally, Chairperson, we just made two or three conclusions from overall conclusions on the performance of government relating to key areas which require attention. The first is just to note that the 10 and 15 year reviews produced by the Presidency identified implementation of policies as the key challenge, and we think that this analysis, particularly the midterm review, confirms that this is still the key challenge facing governments. Further, that those implementation challenges relate to weaknesses with generic management functions, such as financial management, supply chain management, human resource management, procurement, planning and monitoring, and facilities management. And it's weaknesses with those generic management functions which is leading to many of our service delivery problems, including, for example, the textbook delivery problem, which is as a result of weak financial management, weak supply chain management, and the lack of adequate monitoring systems. Shortages of ARVs in some provinces. Under expenditure on municipal capex and lack of maintenance of basic services at municipal level, and missing of the targets for increasing access to basic services. Appointment of unsuitably qualified people in key municipal positions, which leads to poor municipal service delivery, and non-payment to suppliers within 30 days. As I mentioned, the evidence is that this is largely due to weak management within departments more than anything else, and the poor condition of some frontline service delivery sites. So our conclusion is that there's a need for government as a whole to focus on, to have a strong focus on improving these generic management functions across governments. And then finally, we also conclude that there's also a need for national departments to play a stronger role with regard to concurrent functions in terms of putting in place more comprehensive appropriate minimum norms and standards for the quality of provincial and local delivery of services, to put in place stronger monitoring systems to monitor adherence to these norms and standards, and to capacitate themselves to provide more support or to take corrective actions in terms of relevant constitutional and legislative provisions where necessary, where the minimum norms and standards are not being met. And in that regard, there's an urgent need to finalize the monitoring support and intervention bill. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Dr. Phillips, for that elaborative presentation that you've actually done. Honorable members, I want to believe that as Public Safety and Administration and Portfolio Committee, we were privileged to actually go through this in details, you know, so that, you know, whenever we take up any other task, we have the entire understanding of the medium-term report that has been written. We think this is one good report, and you know, we've gone through it thoroughly. We really appreciate what the department has done. We've got now a full picture of where we are in terms of this full assessment. Before I can actually go into some areas, can I then allow the members, you know, who wants to interact with this presentation first? If members have issues that they want to talk about, they want to interact with particular areas, this is our opportunity, and we definitely have a bigger task here to deal with this report, and we will actually outline how again can we get involved in terms of these details. So they're very critical, particularly for Parliament. For us as people who are dealing with oversight, this information can be utilized much more appropriately. Honourable de Dwight, you start, and then you'll be followed by Honourable Kimby.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Listen, I have quite a few points. It will take me just a few minutes to run through it. All of them are not questions, because I think most of the questions has been answered, Dr. Phillips, and it's quite an extensive report. It's just some things I want to point out, and it runs like a solid thread through it. If you do pick up a question, then just you know, write it down. first of all, I would say it is quite insightful and it places shocking, but that we know already, and I would not dwell on issues covered by other committees. It's not very useful for me to go into detail about you know, education, health, and so forth. It's just excuse me. On page 7, on the last sentence, one often wonders how targets are determined. Okay, but we don't have to go into detail, but I was just thinking about it. I think on page 7 also the statement one can make about education, I think you made it in the end, is that sooner or later you can do all the planning and everything have been in place, but the operational realities hit you. I think that's where it's come down to. I've just had on page 11, I've had a quick glance on the midterm review, but I didn't pick it up. It says that 19.9 million people were tested for HIV, but it doesn't say in this review how many are actually HIV positive. I've checked, but maybe I missed it. It was too quick to read. And also with the TB, There was 8 million tested, but it doesn't say how much actually tested positively. Then on page 22, the decisions on the youth employment program and urgent implementation of these, I was just wondering if that does include the controversial huge wage subsidy. Because I'm not quite familiar with all the programs and that. I'm just wondering if that does it include. In page 27, there's on the rural development. Previously, I was in the agricultural committee, and I must say I have quite a lot of sympathy with you on this report because the agricultural department cannot supply the answers to this. So I don't suppose we have to go further on that. Page 29, we sometimes use terms like strengthen rural local government and tackle high food prices. I think sometimes it's confusing and very broad. I see later on page 39, strengthening municipal capacity is defined in a couple of ways. So these kind of reports, we must just be careful that when words are these are used, we maybe should have a footnote on that. On page 37, the operation clean audit has had little impact. Now here it's referred to financial administrative capabilities of municipalities. And that is where this line, this silver thread, this golden thread, whatever, is starting to run. And we can see that it is definitely capabilities, administrative and financial capabilities. It's not only municipalities, but it's running right through the whole system. And that brings me, actually, it's nice, it was running nice through the pages now. So that brings me to page 38, where you say, develop a tool for monitoring and identifying management and service delivery problems in local government. Now, the statistics that you gave are quite significant, but as we see later, that what we need in a kind of report like this is a density distribution that you find in the bell curve. The natural statistical phenomenon of the natural distribution. So we can see what happens. What is the tail end? Is it pushed up? Is it flattened? Or is it skewed over? You know, the bell curve. So that will give us an idea what the percentiles are on the edges, or extreme bad and very good. Maybe one should. I've never found a bell curve actually in my 3 years in Parliament now on one of these reports. You know, it does restrict your insight into these statistics. Right. Then on page 39, the strengthening of the municipal capacity is defined, and it says again there. Here runs the silver thread again that the ensure the post is filled with qualified and capable staff. And when we start looking at this capability and management skills of public servants in the whole public service, then this bell curve becomes important because we must know out of a population of 50 million how many people actually has now been trained to this extent that they can be qualified and capable of their job, because that is the real challenge that we have. I'm looking at this, Chairperson, from a view of our committee, not from the operational departments. Then this is a serious question. It comes on page 48, and this really becomes a serious question we must ask ourselves, and I'm glad it's in this report. It says in page 48 that we must resolve the issue of single public service. Okay? This is definitely an issue, but we must ask the questions: would central control and deployment solve the problem of the skill shortage according to the bell curve? Okay? And does the answer not lie with more hands-on management and oversight by locally elected politicians and audit committees, and that these politicians take responsibility and be accountable? So that is really some of the issues that we must resolve sooner or later. Page 56, Chairperson, I'm running through it now very quickly. Thank you for your patience. Page 56, it is shocking results of the departments not being able to do even a self-assessment. I'm just looking at the Eastern Cape, even Gauteng, KwaZulu-Natal. I mean, Gauteng has got a high percentage of middle-class people, you know. One should think that they should do better. KwaZulu-Natal and Northwest and least but not last, last but not least, national, and we can hardly blame the provinces if national cannot do the self-assessment. Then on page 62, Department of Home Affairs. Now, this is where the bell curve comes in again. How long is the turnaround time for the remainder of the 33%? That's not in that turnaround time. So this is where the question is. And the same with the SAPS. They are now on 16 and a half minutes, but what is the target, really? What's the quickest response on the one edge and on the other edge of the bell curve? Is it 5 minutes? Is that the target? I think 5 minutes could be quite accurate, and that is very quick. But we have to look at this distribution, because sometimes you hear that people have waited 30 or 40 or 50 minutes for the police. And then the conclusion on that is that the average says little if we don't have the full distribution density. That's what we need in the statistics. Page 69, Home Affairs. What about the rest? Yeah, on the poor, I've just taken out the red ones. The one quite prominent there is the dignified treatment and the complaint management system. Now, dignity, as we know, is a basic right described in the Constitution. Everybody's got the right to dignity. And it's actually quite shocking that dignity, dignified treatment by public experiencing dignity, is the one that's caused the most red points there. That's shocking. So that shows me there's something wrong with the attitude and the management. And that ties in nicely, secondly, with the, according to the systematic approach to management, this is a significant shortcoming. Okay? When I talk about systematic, just that we go on the same page, every little piece fits together and the one is independent of and so on. Okay. So again, both of these are pointing to a management deficiencies. And then, very nicely, you get to the end. It seems that the supervision of management seems to be a problem. Once you get to the management level, after that, there's a disconnection somewhere between the minister and where what we call management. Somewhere there. There's a supervision problem. I don't know what it is, but that needs to be solved. And it's no wonder that some ministers are in such deep trouble as far as the perception of the public or the press or whoever is concerned, because this is what we have a problem. And then I must say, I'm glad that you ended your last sentence that we need a bill on this, because Chairperson, this is what we're going to start working forward to, because if we don't do this and we don't put it in legislation, there's nothing we can do. The big problem with the, and I told my colleagues that, and they took offense, don't you worry, when I said that when the Systems Act Systems and Structures Act was written, there's no sanctions. There are no sanctions. The MFMA was written. There were sanctions. You can go to jail for so long, blah, blah, blah. But what do you do if you say you can't commit murder? Okay, so what? So what next? I've committed the murder. What next? You must have a sanction. You must have a penalty. So that is the shortcomings that we had in the Municipal Structures Act. I'm not so familiar now with all the amendments, but certainly, Chairperson, when we do this bill, when we go for this, we must do it complete. We must do it right from the first time, straight through with the right sanctions. Thank you.
Next, thanks, Honourable Dundee.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I concur with you that we are privileged to get this information. You know, I don't have questions, but I'd like to congratulate Doc about this. Actually, I remember before 2009, we used to say the government is just throwing money, no monitoring, no evaluation. Now we can say that the government is working. This is a well done. So, the only thing that I would like to ask is, do you have an oversight? an oversight committee, where do you report? Do you take this thing to the cabinet? And then how do you take this thing to those various departments? And how do you see our portfolio committee or our cluster, government cluster, to help and to support you in this thing? Because, Chair, I think this job, which is done by this department, I think the public need to know that the government is not sleeping, is doing the best. Because people who are toying outside there, they don't know that there is a good job, that there is a good job that we are doing, is doing by the government. I think this thing, we need to take it up, and I think you need a support committee that can support you on this thing, on this chairperson. Because people, they think that government is just throwing money, employing people. More especially this thing of, you are identifying a lot of things, and you have recommendations. The only thing now, how to take this thing to those various departments which are affected by this. That's the only thing that we need to do. And to me, it gives a hope to the people, those who have privilege to see what is happening inside the government. I'm so happy, Chair, to get this information. I'm very much privileged. I concur with you. And the only thing is to support now this department to make sure that what the things that I identified here, and we take it, we need a way forward. How can we help as a committee, more especially the government, the cluster, the government cluster, governance. So, Chair, I want to congratulate this department. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Tembi, Honorable Maluleke, Honorable Mohali, at the back there.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me also appreciate the presentation. I just want to maybe get some clarity on some issues. The issue of, yes, we have increased the enrollment in the AVET institution and everything, but the only challenge we have, the quality of teaching in AVET, because most of the teachers, they only have matric. It seems the quality of education in AVET is not the right one, but most of the people are enrolled there. We have increased the AVET schools, most in rural areas particularly. And also in terms of no fee schools, yes, we have no fee schools, but we still have the challenges in terms of distribution of the funds to schools. Some are deposited in November, and whereby in December schools are closing. So we have the challenge of addressing problems in our schools. I'm talking because I'm an SGB member of one school at home. Those are the challenges that we are facing. Though we were happy that the no fee school is going to assist us because people were not able to pay school fees, but we still have a little bit challenge that need to be addressed. In terms of unemployment, addressing unemployment youth, we still have a problem whereby some youth, they create jobs for themselves. And somewhere also, we as government, we just, I don't know what to put it. Like, for example, last time we were talking with Christina, there's a guy who is taking photos in a traffic department outside because there's no any person who takes photos. That's the job that he created it for himself. Now, the municipality have taken that photo issue to the traffic department inside, and that young person is no longer having income. So this is also the challenges that we need to address, that if a person has started something, then we see it is important to have it. Why can't we take him to do that work inside? But shall we just leave him like that and take the work for someone who's not interested on that? The other, the last one is on the focus, more focus by provincial government to fulfill their constitutional legislative mandate to support and monitor intervene in municipalities. I just want to check, how are you going to make sure that the provincial government are doing their job? Because if you can look at most of our doys and everything, like where I come from, most of the people are crying with provincial roads. It's not a municipal road, it's a provincial road, but the challenge is at the municipal level. And when you look at the department, they don't care because they are not exactly where people are. They are at Mafikeng, and people are like 400 k's from where they are. So they don't care about what is happening. I just want to check, how are you going to monitor that they are doing what they have to do? Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Maluleka. And lastly, we had Honorable Mohale.
Thank you, Chairperson. And also, I would like to thank Dr. Phillips on this presentation and appreciate it. And also to say to ourselves, government is working. At least we could see where there are improvements. And also we could see where there are no improvements, where there are problems, where there are things that government still had to deal with. Government is working. That is one thing that we should be sure of. And thank you, Dr. Phillips, for this report. Mine also will just be comments that you have. Just go and think about them when you are busy doing your work. Because firstly, when I was looking at the education side, I was just thinking about from where we come from. We went to an oversight to Bosile School for the blind and deaf. And seated here when we were reporting here, I was just thinking, but if you talk about teacher training, do you think of teachers who are training at a special school? Because they really have to have something more than the training of other teachers. They're the kinds of children that they're dealing with. And also, thinking about, I know there are several teachers who are blind. During this training, what happens to them? Do they receive the materials that they're supposed to, which are brailled and so on, when you are doing your trainings, or do they just get an ordinary print document? And also, when we're talking about the abet, I was thinking of those with disabilities who are not able to finish their schools and they want to go the abet route. Who's going to teach them at the abet level, with the understanding of the difference of disabilities at the abet level, and also the material, the books at the abet level, whether they are brailled or not? I think when you do your monitoring, these are some of the things that you should look at. And the other issue on health, this thing of shortage of health professionals, what really would like to see more is where you say, yes, there's a shortage of health professionals, but we are going to do 1, 2, 3 in order to close this gap. Because what we hear always, there's a shortage of health professionals, but it seems as if there's nothing been done in that to reduce the gap of the health professionals. One thing that comes to my mind is the program that they have in Limpopo. I'm not sure if it's still there, where they were taking the youth, the child-headed families, where they'll go there and get a child who's got a matric there, and they put them in hospitals to train them. They were doing basic nursing, then they'll continue with whatever. Then they employ them, you know, with nursing when they take you to a hospital. You are already employed, you've got your personal number and so on. I'm not sure if they are still continuing with the program. But at least we could see that because of the shortage of nurses, there's this program of our child-headed families where they do take these kids and to, in order to support the family. So if the Department of Health maybe should come up with programs like there's a shortage of doctors, there's a shortage of occupational therapists or physiotherapists, but we are doing this in order to reduce that gap. And I think also, Chair, on the issue of rural development, you know, when they were talking about utilization of land, because I'm from the rural areas, staying next to farms, I've seen this, where farms have just gone bad. Because one thing that you could attribute to this is the lack of knowledge or of management of farms. Where I think if people are given back their land, they should be taught how to farm. I think some training should go in there to say, how do you manage a farm? And here, you know, we've got this thing of food security. We assist the people who've got who were given their land back. You should do this and this, being trained by government. We give you land, we cannot just giving you land and going back. You see the avocados now, the trees have gone dry, the mangoes and so on. They are no longer farming. It's just that an open land there. I see here you talked about the issue of 27 municipalities to carry out housing functions. And I'm just thinking about capacity at the local level, capacity to do this work, to be able to take the housing function in their hands, the capacity there. Because always when you talk about municipalities, there's lack of capacity, there's lack of capacity. Then are they going to be able to do this? Because last week we've just heard how much of millions have gone back without being spent, the MIG funds. It has never been spent. And you know the capital expenditure in municipalities, we've got big problems with that. another issue is then when you talk about verifying these disclosure forms. Who's supposed to verify this, the disclosure form? Who's going to verify this, that this is true, whatever the financial disclosures these managers have put in there, who is going to verify them and check against the risks and so on? And the unannounced visit that you make, let's say you go to a clinic, to a hospital, or to a police station. You walk into a police station, and you've got a satisfaction survey form. You meet me there. Okay, let's see, how was your treatment and so on. Only to find that I was only there for this form, where they have to confirm that, yes, you are Christina Mohale and so on. Affidavit, I'll be satisfied anyway. You see, for an affidavit, I'll be satisfied. But what about someone who is calling the police station somewhere in a village or in a township saying we've got a problem here, there's a break-in here. The turnaround time there. You know, maybe it's because I've got some experiences where you'll call them and they'll take their time. I had an accident last year, December, where I waited for an hour for a van to come. And I stay about 10 kilometers from the police station. even less, about between 8 and 10 kilometers from a police station. So this turnaround time at police stations, because there are people who will call, who stay if I will not walk into a police station. But for an affidavit, I'm telling you, it's 100% satisfied. And the unannounced visit to a clinic and a hospital, how do you do them? Because if you go there and you are with an employee of the hospital, a person will just say, I am satisfied, because he'll think, no, they are not going to attend to me. If this person is here and I say I am not satisfied, then they are not going to attend me. Let me say, yes, I'm satisfied, I've been here, and so on. And the issue of time, people stay for a very long time at our institution waiting for assistance. What we would like to see is to see people saying, okay, we've got these problems, but we want to solve this problem this way. Not only to say, no, we acknowledge this is a problem here, but how then do we solve that problem? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mohale. Maybe quite quickly before you respond, just to throw in some other few things that came up from the presentation. Honorable Bosheko.
Thank you, Chairperson. And thank you for the wonderful presentation, a very long one, but it's worth it. Mine is not a question, it's just a suggestion. I wanted to suggest that if you can do thoroughly monitoring, especially in our municipalities, where you will find that they employ underqualified and incapable staff. So this in most of our offices, in most of their offices, which resulted in the protest marches all over our country. And then the other thing is the cleanliness in our hospitals. You find that our most rural hospitals are not clean, and then sometimes you find there is no medication and people are dying there. So if you can just monitor thoroughly those hospitals. And then the other thing is our offices in our rural areas where the Batopil principle is not implicated. So do something, because the rural people are most underprivileged people. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mayor Bosheko, and for those suggestions as well. And members, thank you for actually identifying further areas where you identified loopholes and weaknesses, and also by elevating the good work that is already done. I think that was a good. I'll just need to throw in some few, like I indicated, on education. From the presentation, it just comes out very clearly that we've got quite a number of learners that are dropping out towards matric, as it's already captured there. Therefore, it therefore means that we do have a lot of job to search out for. Where do they go? You know, it means the country's in trouble somehow, you know, because they are there somewhere. If they dropped out, what are they doing? Economically, what does it mean? How does it translate? And therefore, it projects a situation where we've got a bigger task to deal with. We appreciate that while we go further on, we realize that there's a lot of money put into the FET colleges, which might be part of assisting with that, though also there are problems that are identified of the alignment of, you know, the lecturers, the OSD issue, which is still, you know, budgetary, it means quite a lot. But surely this is one area that actually says something is not so right, and we couldn't capture it if we're not doing the monitoring and the evaluation, thanks to the report. Now, there's also the issue of career pathing along education, where, you know, learners after completion of their studies, you find that they're still wanting. Possibly it relates to one matter that you normally raises this committee of the HR strategy of the entire country, together with the public safety and administration. Possibly we need a tracking way and an integrated way of how then do we rope on board those learners. It's one matter that we just captured around HR in particular, but it does relate to this career pathing. We can't have learners who doubts that if we finish, we're not going to have a job, or we also cry, we don't have skills, and so on and so on. We do need to get a way of how do we interlink that area. Okay, on the issues of health, the issue of the health workers, the shortage of health workers that is identified by the report. It talks again to the issue that you normally talk about of what kind of a developmental state are we looking at. Should it be top heavy? Should it have a lot of people who implement, you know, in majority rather than just being top heavy? Those are some of the things we still have to interrogate thoroughly and come up with some ways how to balance the state and call it developmental in a manner that takes us forward as the country. And we have as well identified that area. It's one area that we think, even with addressing the organizational redesign, the kind of structures that we want, can they assist us to achieve the objectives that we have already set ourselves, we're already monitoring, and we are already identifying gaps and strengthening those areas. And therefore, we cannot discuss these things in isolation. There is a need to actually look at the broader picture like we are starting to do with this evaluation. Now, we do have to just, you know, these talking about the usage of the public health system, not only public health, even the, you know, we'd need to utilize some public hospitals if we also want to realize it should be majority of us using them, you know, confidently and identifying where there are problems. Zooming into that, I must say, Dr. Finch, I'm one of the people who are using the public health. It's definitely, there's a hospital in Pretoria called, in Tshwane, called Steve Biko. I get the best services, I must say. You know, so I'm confident that the health systems of this country are functioning. I also use the you know, the public schools, by the way. My son is in Irene Primary School, and it's very good. I'm learning from my son because, you know, I learned Bantu education, so many things were not there during those times. He is in Irene, it's a public school. I learn so much. They're doing a good job. Therefore, we do definitely need to anchor that confidence in the public institutions where people may use them when they're not efficient, challenge them and make them to work. And therefore, we will need a campaign around, particularly the public hospitals, you know, because I'm really sure that they're doing good work there. Just that we still think that they can't, you know, we need private something and we'll really pay. It's going to cost us. Okay, now there was a matter again which was raised around local government. We just had a joint committee meeting last week where all MECs of local government were here. We were with COPTA, a joint committee with COPTA. Many things came up exactly the same way as they actually captured. I therefore agree that this report doesn't generate new things. It picks up on issues that are already there, which is part of the collaboration. I think it's good we preach about collaborated way where we can sort of do our work much better. And we have realized, you know, if you listen to yesterday, last week's meeting, you know, where we discussed, including the issues that the Honorable Dudoit is raising and what is already captured, you know, what we now need, it's a collaborated way. How do we deal with these matters that are already captured? You think about as well, you know, the issue of the single public service comes into picture once we discuss, particularly when you look at the issues that affect the municipalities. Even around the HR, you know, how then do we start to integrate those areas? Zoom into a country that is starting to improve the efficiency of functioning. And therefore, those are all the matters that come before us, that challenges us in terms of when we have this information, how do we then deal with it to improve efficiency? On rural development, honorable members did talk But what is worrying is the decline on the job creation, you know, and also other major problems around the district municipalities. Normally when we plan, and the country is very much aware that we want to improve the rural areas, a lot of planning, a lot of resources, but we're not really doing good inroads. You know, we need to interrogate ourselves further. Why do we prioritize rural areas? Why do we talk about it? Why do we put it high on the agenda? But still, we don't get it right because we don't. And therefore, part of this is it's part of saying, what is it that we're not actually doing right? You know, the issue of it's not attractive for workers to go and work there, you know, from the report. You know, people won't want to work, and the environment does not really create an attractive way of, you know, of people wanting to go and work there. They would prefer to work somewhere else, and those are the challenges that the country has to really deal with. The last issue that I just needed to raise is that when we talked about Africa in a better world, we did not reflect on issues like the MDGs, which is part of our program. We don't talk about the African peer review mechanism, which is part of it. I think we can't leave out on all other activities that are major, so huge, particularly around outcome 12 and the Department of Public Safety and Administration. We work on those areas, and also we immediately pick up that those matters are not actually integrated into the report. They're critical, and we would like to see them. Otherwise, most of the matters are captured quite well. We will do a thorough focus on outcome 12 in particular, because it's quite major. But I will actually outline the plan in terms of how we are planning to take forward. We might not necessarily sort of be able to discuss in details. You can just zoom into one or two in quite a summary form. We are still going to deal with the details of the report, and we shouldn't worry if there are areas that you really didn't discuss thoroughly, but you're going to do a breakdown that I will just outline after you have just responded at the moment. Quite briefly.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'd like to suggest firstly thank the members for the inputs and comments. I'd like to say that the comments are noted. I'll try and address some of the questions. I'd like to ask Nawazi also to assist, and perhaps Kenny from DPSA also, if you'd like to respond to some raising issues. Honourable Du Toit, on the issue of youth unemployment, I think what we're saying is that there hasn't been sufficient progress on youth employment against the commitments that we made, and something needs to be done. Decisions need to be made about increased and more and programs which have more impact on youth employment. We're not making a call either way as to exactly what they should be, but we're just making the point that it needs to be a focus to have more effective youth employment programs in place during the remainder of the term. We agree with your observations, which are correct, that if you just look at the average figures, it doesn't give you the full picture. It applies to a number of areas, including, for example, Chairperson, the good hospital that you mentioned. The average figures that we put in the presentation on what the Department of Health has found with regard to the quality of services at health facilities, they don't, if you just look at those figures, they don't reflect the fact that in some hospitals and health facilities, the quality of service is much better than that. In addition, the average figures that we put for access to basic services hide the fact that in some areas, access to basic services is much lower. For example, in some remote rural areas, there are communities which have hardly any access to basic services. So the average national figures hide that kind of thing. So we will in future take your advice, and we will try and provide a better picture and normal distributions on these kind of issues. Honourable Tindy, your question about whether we have an oversight committee and what do we do with the report. We have taken the report to Cabinet. We do take the report to the forum of the South African Directors General's Management Committee, and we take it to the full forum of South African DGs as well. We also go to provincial executive councils and present the results of all of these reports, of the midterm review and of the management performance assessment and the frontline service delivery assessments. And as I said in the introduction, we did engage in an intensive process of discussions with departments when we produced this midterm review to ensure that they are comfortable with what we're putting in there, that there's no inaccuracies, and that it reflects a true picture of the situation. So the process itself is valuable because in itself it's a process where it facilitates government focusing on, agreeing on and focusing on the areas that require more attention. There was a question about how we see Parliament supporting. We have also engaged on this issue with our committee, which is the Appropriations Committee. We report to the Appropriations Committee as DPME. And in our discussions with the Appropriations Committee, it's been agreed that there's a common interest between Parliament and DPME, and that common interest is to see the performance of government improve, and that there's a lot of room for us to collaborate in terms of that common interest, in terms of us providing information to Parliament, and in terms of Parliament following up with departments with regard to their progress in addressing the kind of issues that we're raising. Of course, that collaboration would need to be done in such a way that the independence of Parliament is still respected. Perhaps, Nawaz, you might want to address the issue about what has been done about the shortage of health professionals. I'll just do a couple of others first. With regard to the issue of the capacity of local municipalities to be accredited to provide the housing function, there is a process where that capacity is checked before municipalities are accredited. So they have to show the national and provincial department that they have got certain capacities in place before the accreditation takes place. That's why the accreditation process is taking place slowly and taking place incrementally. Benny, you might want to answer on the question of who should do the financial risk, the verifications of financial disclosure forms, and who should do the risk assessments on that.
Thank you very much, DG. Mine is to just respond to the health, human and resource shortage issue. Certainly, there's about four things I want to highlight. To the established denial engagement and monitoring and evaluation with health that they are doing in order to address the issue of shortages. The first one, I think, is one that honourable members are aware of, where for the first time last year, I think round about August 2011, the National Department of Health put forward a human resource strategy for health. For a very long time, we simply had a policy that was very broad and did not directly link input to throughput in relation to population growth and increasing the burden of disease in the country. So in our view, that was a welcome development. Certainly, though, it raises an issue about the extent to which the strategy can be translated into action and the extent to which it can begin to address some of the challenges that the DG was referring to. What the sector has done in the short term, I think as part of doing that, is to enter into very targeted discussions or focused discussions with DHEDs, where through the Ministry of Higher Education and also in direct engagements with institutions of higher education and training, the Ministry of Health and the Department have entered into agreements, for example, with the Wits University, looking at support that can be offered by the health sector to accelerate the numbers of doctors that can be trained in the 1 year. Wits University was the first of such agreements, and as I understand it, there are plans for universities like Tarkies and to some extent UCT and Stellenbosch, with the primary focus on medical professionals and accelerating training and throughput of that particular category. In addition, what's also been done is to look at the bilateral agreements that we have with countries like Cuba, who have quite extensive medical and other health training programs. Certainly, that's not without its challenges, but I think the understanding is that the achievements far outweigh, you know, the teething problems around our young people who get recruited and have to adapt to the Cuban culture and also begin to understand the Spanish language that is used as a medium of instruction. If you calculate that in relation to our burden of disease and the shortage of doctors that we have in our country, I think the achievements of Cuba entering into an agreement with us of training in excess of 1,000 doctors per year, which is what our 8 universities can produce in 1 year, that's certainly a doubling of doctors, and I think very good progress going forward. And then the last one I wanted to highlight is the issue that I think honorable members are aware of, where there's been re-engineering of the primary health care, as the DG referred to it, where we are, where the health sector is saying there needs to be a shift from hospital-based care and inculcating a culture of health promotion and prevention and getting community members to go to primary health care centers in good enough time before their conditions have worsened and all they are getting is treatment, perhaps at a later stage. So as I understand it, what the health sector has done is to form what we call outreach teams. Some will be based at the school level so that children can access issues like oral health care, you know, be educated about sexuality, be vaccinated where appropriate and the works. And then the second element is an instant where we would have primary health care teams going out on a world-based level, almost adopting a bit of a hybrid, primarily informed by the Brazilian primary healthcare approach of targeting wards and promoting healthcare, identifying challenges at an early stage. And then the last one is more what they call a district-based clinical specialist approach, where using a district as your mode of operation, or we then target districts that especially have high burdens of disease around maternal and child health. There has been a sort of standard stipulated around what types of teams we want for all of these three approaches I've indicated, where, for example, the primary focus for the district specialist approach team would be to ensure that you've got obstetric and gynecology expertise to address maternal and child health problems. And then you would also have your pediatric nurses who help us attend to all your child health complications. And then just lastly, DG, the issue around the rural hospitals. Certainly, as we indicate in the report, there are concerns around the quality of health care, notwithstanding the good work that, from a leadership perspective, that the National Department of Health has spearheaded. But to address rural hospital challenges, I think also just broadly hospital challenges, honorable members would also be aware that there's also been a drive to strengthen management capacity, which has been informed by work that was done about a year ago, where all of the hospital heads were assessed in terms of functionality and effectiveness. So basically setting a benchmark and using that process to inform what are the minimum competency requirements expected of people who are managing hospitals. There was also a recategorization of the different hospitals, where in certain instances hospitals were graded downwards because of the level of service that they were providing. And then the third part of that would be then having the large-scale advertisement of CEOs of hospitals, as you would have seen a couple of months ago. That is meant to primarily ensure that in the medium to long term, the sector has got appropriately qualified and skilled CEOs who manage a range of hospitals, ranging from your primary healthcare right up until your central hospital. I raise this because our view from the review, and I think on the basis of work that you would have also seen, is that the management of facilities or just different levels within the health sector is the primary critical success factor for getting a range of things right. we can have the best of equipment and the work, but if there are challenges in management, then we would have serious challenges. And we could argue that that applies across the spectrum, from education right up until municipalities. So thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Madam Chair and members. Thanks, DG. Very quick response. The current process in relation to the filing of financial disclosures, remember it's limited to just senior managers at the moment. So all senior managers completed, it's signed by the executing authority and it's lodged with the Public Service Commission. The Commission does an analysis of all of the forms that are submitted, and I think they do some of them to a greater extent than others based on sampling basis. They do have links with CIPRO, with South Revenue Services, with the Property and Deeds Office and so on, where they verify all of these documents. And they will be submitting a report based on their analysis. Going forward, what we've done as DPSA, the Minister has submitted a CAB memo that for all DDGs and heads of departments going forward must declare upfront before appointment is made their financial disclosure, or identify any possible areas of conflict in relation to that appointment in a department. So we've included that in the protocol document for the appointments of DDGs and heads of departments. We've also, and I think the committee will also note, Madam Chair, we've done some extensive work in terms of the integrity management framework, which needs to be finalized. I think it's long overdue now. One of the recommendations there is the appointment of ethics officers in each of the departments to verify. And another key recommendation in that document which we need to take forward is the extension of financial disclosures to those involved in supply chain procurement areas. And those two key areas needs to be finalized and taken forward. And then the final point from our side is the e-filing system for financial disclosures. The members were aware of the prototype. It's now at a stage where we're piloting it, and we're currently looking at the linkages electronically to all of these institutions so that we'll be able to do verifications better. Thanks.
I really believe we had a fruitful day that we still need to utilize further, you know. Thanks to all of you with that good work, Dr. Shum. I'll just outline how we want to approach this as a proposal, and therefore we will actually follow up in terms of how we implement that. We have been talking about the collaboration as a committee, and therefore we have looked into this report. We think it will be appropriate for us to come together with the committee, the standing committee on appropriations, to actually plan how broader can we be able to deal with the oversight along the report that is already presented before us. And therefore, we will then sit with the Appropriations Standing Committee and look into the approach and look into how we can be able to work together on this report. Further than that, there had been a process the bid report that comes with. We do have recommendations from various committees for the budgetary reviewer recommendations that we normally undergo as all committees of parliament. So once we undergo that process, we also have recommendations, and those recommendations become areas where we've identified weaknesses as different committees. So we would like to sort of collaborate all those areas, for some of them are even common. You know, like I normally say, committees that fall particularly within this cluster, governance and monitoring, their work cuts across, you know, whatever we're doing, when you look at it, it's not for the committee, one committee, but it's the work that needs to be known by Parliament so that when we do oversight, all the committees are able to do that. So it largely cuts across. So the recommendations as well from the BRRR processes, when you look across those recommendations, we cut across some of them, they're common, we can pull them together, and in our approach of clusters, it may be much easier to identify areas that you want to zoom in, which therefore means we will also utilize the BRRR report. We have this detailed medium-term review report, and also our cluster approach now can focus on values, we'll break down the areas in terms of the clusters so that we can thoroughly deal and zoom into the areas that are identified here. And therefore, all reports, annual, auditor general, this report, and so on and so on, all of them, we're going to be able to utilize them. And we will engage as this committee with the chair of chairs in terms of motivating for a process that can assist us to deal with this work, you know, because we would definitely have to have the support of the chair of chairs and also the breakdown so that it can be programmed within parliament, because if it's planned outside parliament, might not fit what we're trying to do. As a result, we might lose out on this good work, because this report provides an opportunity for us to have a collated way that is already brought to us in order to efficient oversight. It's part of assisting us as Parliament. The issue of partnership then comes into picture. I just wanted to emphasize that as this committee, we have also been working with Public Service Commission that normally brings reports, you know, where we actually utilize them, you know, for oversight. You know, it's easier when something researched, worked on, comes before you, so that you don't think that maybe here there's a weakness, but you know, based on what is researched thoroughly, it's worked on thoroughly, then you can be able to interrogate and actually want some answers and maybe do even side visits there if they then it. So, as public service and administration, we, you know, well, one wants to refer to the constitution. It helps if we can be able to have an overarching overview in terms of what is happening in government, because it then helps us to implement. It will help us as parliament to implement the chapter 9 on public administration, all those areas in an overarching way. You know, it's something that we've been, you know, lamenting, talking about, you know, trying to have a way of how best can we have an overarching overview over the public services, not piecemeal approaches. And the cluster approach, the collaborative way, is going to help us then to really look into that. Based on that chapter 10, it will help us to look at the basic values, the principles governing the public administration as outlined there, section 195, all of it, and also the admin, the areas outlined in 195/2 of admin in every sphere of government. You know, we have heard how the municipalities are coming into picture now, you know, how it is going to be approached. There is a discussion with Public Service Commission in terms of expanding into those areas, but also there is a discussion in terms of how do we have the independent institutions capacitated sufficiently to cover all the scope that we require, you know, because we would like to get all those areas as well. And then that, I think those issues then will then assist us to deal with an efficient oversight. And we appreciate this. We think it was such a fruitful day to deal with it. We're going to plan thoroughly. This is not just one document written that is going to sit there, but it's going to utilize. And our wish is that at the end of the day, you know, because we have legislated this kind of an oversight in Parliament, that we need to do an overarching section 195 of you know, oversight over the public service. Now, if we have this kind and we're going to do that, those collaboration, it will help us that one day, you know, not one day, but we're all already there, where we can say, on the state of the nation address, key issues will be picked up, you know, not piecemeals of issues, but they can be picked up, they can be part of the state of the nation address, so that we've got enough and sufficient space to follow up on them for the implementation, because they will be captured there as areas. But we also have to capture our achievements, you know, because we many times and often it's easy to focus on all the weaknesses that we have, of which we do have, and we are doing something, you know, because we want to follow up on that. But we many than often we don't talk about the good ones. Yes, of course, as Parliament, I always say we don't really want to talk about what is good. It's fine. Thank you. But the weaknesses are the ones that we really want to follow up on. That is why we are here, in order to complement one another, to do an efficient impact, to deliver the services for our people out there. We really appreciate this. Honourable members, ladies and gentlemen, you know, all of you, we think we had a very fruitful day. We don't mind even if it went into our lunch. We will be breaking now to just grasp something to us. We are also going to go to the house. Thank you very much to everyone. We can adjourn the meeting.